Hey, gang, if you live in Austin and you are an XTC fan, tonight is the night for you. That's right. Friday, September 25th at Strange Brew Loungeside, XTC, a tribute will be taking place. The great John Green has assembled a fabulous band, learned the songs, and is featuring so many singers. Matt the Electrician, Bruce Hughes, Stephen Doster, Sela, David Rice, John Sanchez, Chris Nelson, John Pointer, Noel Hampton, Darren Murphy, Miles Zuniga, and me, Johnny Gowdy. That's right. That star-studded cast at Strange Brew Loungeside tonight, Friday, September 25th, 8 p.m. Proceeds benefit the Sims Foundation.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time. How did I get here? And now here is your host, Johnny Gowdy.
All right. Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I want to welcome any new listeners that we have because I know that when we get someone outside of like the music world on the show, we get a lot of new listeners. So welcome to the show. My name is Johnny Gowdy. I host and produce this show. I'm a musician, and I sit in my apartment and talk to other musicians. Sometimes I go to other places. Sometimes I do live ones. Anyway, a lot of times I have people from outside the fray, outside the musical world. Today, I have that. I have comic and writer Chip Pope on the show. I really like Chip. He's very, very funny. You might know him. He was a writer for Austin Stories, for The Good Family, for Ellen, for the Beavis and Butthead reprise that they did in the 2000s a couple years ago, for the Rosie Show, for he was on Last Comic Standing, and he wrote on Natasha Leggero's new Comedy Central special. He is a very funny comic as well. He has an alter ego that makes music called R-Romance. It's kind of like new romantic synth music, and we get into some good stuff about that and about those kind of singers, guys like from ABC and stuff like that. Anyway, I have a feeling that I knew Chip when he lived in Austin in the 90s. He lives in Los Angeles now, and he has for some time. But I have this feeling that I knew him then. I know that we have a lot of mutual friends. But anyway, Chip Pope is a very funny guy. He's got a show coming out on Nat Geo. That's a comedy and history show that he wrote with another guy that's been on the show who I also like very much, named Howard Kramer, who I did kind of know in the 90s when he was here. And anyway, great, very funny guy, Chip Pope. Sit back and enjoy it. It's coming up in just a second. Let me tell you what's going on with me. Of course, you heard at the top of the show there that I'm doing that XTC show tonight, which is September 25th at Strange Brew Loungeside. Lots and lots of singers are playing. My friend John Green assembled a great band featuring Derek Morris, Tom Pearson, Nate De La Costas, Chris Nelson, Sela, John Sanchez on guitar. A lot of great singers are going to be there singing. My bandmate Darren Murphy is even going to be there. And look, I know a lot of the songs are secret, but they released a video of mine last week at a rehearsal. So I'll tell you, I'm doing Kaleidoscope, which isn't officially an XTC song. They have an alter ego band that they made a record as a band called the Dukes of Stratosphere in the 80s. And that's really my jam. Chips from the Chocolate Fireball. Or Starball or whatever. That's a great fucking album. I say, look it up. Dukes of Stratosphere. I'm doing the song Kaleidoscope, which I have to say is way in my wheelhouse. Sounds like a song I would try to write a song like that. And now I was thinking today, I wrote a song with Gabe Rhodes, a great song about the man that wanted everything. And I was thinking to myself, that's really in my wheelhouse, that Kaleidoscope song, that XTC song. Maybe I should have done something weird. Maybe I should have gone outside of the thing. But I've always loved that song. And it has a solo in it where a guy saws something. And I was thinking about taking a saw and like a two saw horses and a 2x4 and maybe sawing a piece of wood while I was up there. But I have no experience with the saw. I'd hate to cut my hand off or slice into my leg with the saw. So I'm not going to do that. I have some Skyrocket shows going on this weekend. We're doing some private stuff, a little fundraiser for the Big Brothers and Big Sisters of Houston tomorrow night. That should be fun. Sunday, I'm going to go see my friend who has the Feedback podcast. He's doing a thing at the Empire Control Room. Check it out. Look up for the Feedback podcast. You'll find it on Facebook. He's got an event going on at like in the afternoon. Going to go to the Pecan Street Festival here in Austin on Sunday. Sounds good, right? Looking good. All right, so let's get to this conversation with my friend Chip Pope. He was here about a month ago, and we sat down and had a fantastic conversation. He made me laugh a lot, and he ended up coming to the Skyrocket show that night. It was nice to see him out there. Wish we could exchange some words, but we didn't get to because he left before we were finished, because it is a long-ass show, my friends. All right, Chip Pope, very funny guy. He just recently wrote on the Natasha Leggero Comedy Central special, and he's a great writer. He's got a show coming out on Nat Geo about history and comedy, or it's a comedy show about history. Telling you stories? He explains it. You'll see what I'm talking about. You can find him on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. His name is Chip Pope. He's a great guy. He's very funny. I hope that you all have a very great weekend. Enjoy my conversation with Chip. Let's get down.
Is there like a pool down there, like right by the lake?
It's right on the lake. Awesome.
That's cool.
It's as good. Well, it's a pool. It's not quite Barton Springs. Mm-hmm. And you don't have the hippies. There's a lot more like kind of like youth down there. I feel a little weird going down there because we're
really?
The same age.
Are we the same exact age?
Well, no, I'm probably.
You're probably younger.
Nope, a little bit older.
Really?
Yeah, I was born in October of 1968.
Oh, okay.
And so in my like research of
younger.
You, yeah.
Oh my God! Research.
When's your birthday?
Who knows what that puts out? June 2nd.
Okay. 69. So you just turned 46.
46. Yeah.
Yeah. How do you? I saw a video that you have about dating, and you talked about dating younger people.
Oh right. Yeah.
My girlfriend's younger than me, a lot younger. And some people like.
Do people frown? They frown on it more, I guess, it's a guy and a girl, you know?
Yeah.
Two guys, no one gives a
that's
shit.
The thing is like, yeah, I guess that's true.
It's just like, well, guys can shoulder it, you know?
Well, the problem is there's women that look down on it, and even friends of mine that did at the beginning, and now they're cool with it, but they're the same people that would say, you go, girl, if it was a girl my age dating a dude.
Right,
that age.
Exactly. That's true. There is like all sorts of double standards.
Right. But you said something in that video that hit home, and it was your immaturity.
Uh-huh.
And what happened to people of our generation that made us so weird?
I have no idea.
But there is like this stunted kind of development.
Yeah. I mean, was it the first generation that just... No, because you always hear the 70s was the me generation and everything, you know.
I guess so, but those people got their shit together and became like Republicans and stuff.
No, yeah, yeah. But, you know, think about it. I think like the stunting is probably from our parents, because my mom definitely just wanted, you know, and when I was like 8 years old, she didn't seem that interested in being a parent. You know, she still wanted to
go out.
It's the 70s, and you want to meet guys and, you know, go on dates. And we'd go on, like, dates with her sometimes, which would be weird. And you'd be in, like, someone's Jeep, like in the back of someone's Jeep that worked for Schlumberger or something. Right? Like, we lived in Corpus Christi when I was a little kid. And it would just be like,
would it take you to like
hey,
the
let's
centenary
go to the art
Oyster
museum?
House?
There's like nothing to do down there in Corpus Christi. So it'd just be like a drive over a bridge.
Yeah. You guys want to see the
Bay
Lex?
Bridge and the Jeep. The what?
You guys want to see the Lex?
What's the
that
Lex?
That giant aircraft carrier that's parked there on the other side of the bridge.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. There was that. Yeah. There was like, I don't know. We went there a couple weeks ago because my grandmother still lives down there. And, my mom would be like, well, they used to have some good, best oysters in town was at that place. And now it's closed down. You know, all the things that have changed and everything.
Yeah.
Everything's like a Jason's Deli or whatever, you know. But I don't know. So it's just weird to go back to a place where you grew up, you know, because my grandmother just won't stop dying. She won't die. and my aunt has to take care of her, and then my mom is still like, you know, just not my mom. There's no reason why my mom couldn't be down there taking care of her. She just doesn't want to, and so she's not going to be down there.
So maybe it's their generation.
I mean, it could be.
What I mean, maybe it's the baby boomers. They just stayed selfish the whole time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But my grandmother is also horribly selfish. So I don't know if it might be generations. It might just be certain pockets of people.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, my grandmother, I don't know. She's had 8 strokes, okay, in the past, like, 3 years. And my aunt is just like, you have to stop having strokes.
What?
Basically, like, we can't afford it. Like, they have to call the ambulance. And then because she's already in, like, assisted living. And it's like, yeah, I got to call the ambulance. They got to go to the hospital. And then she just always comes out of these strokes just like, hey, what's up? And it's just like, it's insane. And she's so... I don't know, but I saw with her, like when I was with her, I kind of saw a little bit of where I get my sense of humor from, because she just, everything is just like with a smile, and isn't it great, but like knowing that it's like just total shit. So it's just like, yeah, it's horrible, you know? And so I just feel like I have that, like she'll just do, she was a, when we were leaving, like we took her to lunch and we're leaving, and well, she goes, lay down with me and take a nap. That was the weirdest thing. And my mom's like, she does that to me all the time. Yeah. And I was like, that is so creepy. And then she goes, this, and she just had the smile on her face and goes, and I don't know if it's because she's like on some medication. I don't think she's that medicated, or if she's just insane, but she goes like, well, maybe this will be the time that the good Lord takes me, like with a smile on her face. Like she wants to die, but her body won't let her die for some reason. Or like, I don't know, God doesn't want her, I don't know, or something, because she's just hanging in there. It's so crazy, just to their consternation, because she was not a good mother. And then to them, and then my, they'll never hear this. And then my, they don't, it takes my mom like all, you know, she still just learned how to operate America's Got Talent. So there's no way she's going to be like listening to podcasts. But like, you know, so their mother was not very, you know, very withholding them. Not a great mother, very vain and everything. And my aunt probably took the most verbal abuse from my grandmother. There was never any more than like verbal abuse, but that's enough and unnecessary, you know. But, and so, you know, that's a lot of times that's what happens, is the one that takes the most abuse is the one that gets like saddled
the closest.
Yeah. With the taking care of them. So I don't know. So it's a bum out that way, but
yeah,
not to bring it thanks to a screeching halt. But.
Yeah. You really brought it down.
You're the one with the Elliott Smith set list on their wall. So
I think. Well, you're the comedian. Like...
Exactly. I know. It's a couple of saddos.
I was trying to I've been trying to figure out now for years, since I saw you at that at Moon Tower a couple of years ago.
Uh-huh.
How I know you. I know.
I don't know. I mean,
I have hung out
like,
with you. I like when I look at your face.
Well, no, Johnny Hardwick, maybe. I don't know. Kit. You probably knew Kit. Kit was a waitress at the Velveeta Room. You know, Kit. KYTTE. And so she was like, Kit. She was friends.
Sounds like the drummer of a heavy metal band.
Yeah, but she was friends with Bruce Hughes. Bruce Hughes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe so.
And so maybe that way.
Maybe something which, like that.
On another side note, my mom goes down every Sunday night to the
to
Saxon
the Resentments?
To see the Resentments. Yeah.
Wow.
And I've been down with her a couple of times. It's cool with it. It's so interesting. It's just such an interesting menagerie of
when you first
older people. I mean, I wonder what the band thinks about it, because they're not, it seems like they're, the people that show up to see them are a good 25, 30 years older than it seems like the members of the band.
Yeah.
And so I wonder what, because you see that guy Miles from Fastball or whatever is there and everything. And I'm just like, well, he's probably my age. And so I wonder what they think of their
He's like a couple of years older than
audience,
us, but he
you know?
When I go see them, I'm always like, oh, does this mean like now we're that generation, like
right.
now we're like in the Joe Ely area,
right,
like
right.
even
I
that
so,
back
huh?
when I in the 90s I thought they were old,
right,
you know,
right.
I don't think Joe Ely listens you, to this show.
Yeah, maybe not. Uh-oh.
Well, definitely not anymore.
Yeah, like I remember when being a teenager and seeing like the Fabulous Thunderbirds, and they were probably just like 10 years older than we are, but they just look like adults that were like 50, you know?
Yeah.
Like when you know, Tough Enough or whatever they would show on MTV, you know, you'd be like, those guys just look like grown-ups, you know, as opposed to Madonna.
Did you live in Austin in that time?
I moved to Austin to go to college in 87. So I was here from 87 to 91 and then back again from like 92 to 98.
Okay.
So I spent a good
I was here in the 92 to 98 era. Uh-huh. But what were you doing during that 90? You did Austin Stories.
I was doing stand-up. And then that led to Austin Stories. And teaching comedy defensive driving, which was...
See, I took comedy defensive driving from Howard.
Oh, from Howard.
Kramer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's how I met him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good... He was a good defensive driving teacher. I guess. I don't know. I wonder what his class was like.
I don't know. You know what's funny is I took it with Sharon Ely. She and I took it together.
Okay, wow.
She was like, I know this comedy defensive driving thing over at Esther's Follies we can go to, and so we did that.
Time in my class was, I geeked out, and like no one else did, but now I'm going to be really bad and not remember, wait, the name, Mike McCarthy, is that it? He produced Dead Milkman.
Yeah, yeah, he produced my record. He did? Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. And so how crazy. And so I should have Googled you, I guess. I'm sorry. I'm such a bore.
You don't have to do that.
Like, with my mom. But, yeah, and so I was just, like, freaking out, you know, because of, I used to love the Dead Milkman and everything. And so, and then, what was he in? Glass Eye, I guess, that group. I think it was in Glass Eye, right?
No, I think you worked with them.
Wait,
maybe we're thinking of different Mike McCarthys.
Wait, no, hold on. Well, wait, there's a Mike Spoon? McCarthy that produced Spoon, right?
Right, yeah, that's
the
one.
That's the guy who produced your thing.
Yeah.
If there were only some way to find out.
Who
produced Dead Milkman, Beelzebubba?
Here it comes.
Here it comes. It might not, it's can't, it's someone from Glass Eye, right? I don't know. Oh, I'm so dumb. Brian Beatty. Brian Beatty.
Yeah.
What was I thinking? He was in my class, Brian Beatty. So I was all excited. Hey, look, that was 20 years ago. So.
Well, someone was just...
Forgive my faulty
someone
memory.
Someone was just on the show the other day that he produced their record. I can't remember offhand who it was right away.
Maybe Girl
Pilot. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Or Emily Wolf. I don't know.
But yeah, but he was cool. So and one time I had Rooster... Who's it? Rooster McAndrews? Was that a guy?
I think that's a sporting goods store.
Yeah, okay.
There's a guy.
Rooster McAndrews, if that is the last name, was in my class and he was awesome. And I would just periodically ask him sporting good questions, you know, so.
Throughout the thing. Did you know who he was?
Yeah. Well, they sign their name and everything, you know, when you go through the roll call at first. And so then sometimes there'd be names that you... recognize.
Yeah.
So that's how I was like, Brian Beatty. Oh, gosh. You know, you don't want to single out people because it's defensive driving class, but, you know, you had like 6 hours and there were a captive audience. So.
It made me always remember Howard Kramer because he did that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He would just single out people.
No, he singled me out.
He singled you out.
I was in a band called Mr. Rocket Baby, and he was saying that you couldn't get out of a ticket if you were the mayor, if you were such and such, and he walked up behind me and he put his hands on my shoulders, or even if you're Mr. Rocket Baby. And he was like, that's right, ladies and gentlemen, we've got a celebrity in here today.
Oh, my God. That's so Howard.
Yeah. Anyway, so I was looking on your IMDb, and you were in a movie that my ex-wife was in.
What?
Or you worked on a movie as a PA. Blank Check.
Oh, my God. Blank Check. Jeez. The old hits. Yeah. Michael Jackson's favorite movie, by the way. Yeah. I don't know if it was about a blonde 10-year-old.
Yeah. It was about
looking back.
I remember watching it after it came out, but she had been cut out. She was like, there's a scene. It was in the preview, which was weird. There's a scene where, like, he gets the million-dollar guy makeover, and she's one of the people that does his hair or something like that.
Okay.
But it wasn't in the movie. Anyway.
Oh, wow. Well, I know that it's Michael Jackson's favorite movie because when he did History, remember when he had that greatest hits? The guy to direct the promo film for it with, like, the helicopters erecting the statue and all that stuff. It was the guy who directed Blank Check because Michael Jackson loved Blank Check so much. He's got to be the only one who ever liked that movie. Like, my main memory of that movie was Tone Loke, for some reason, getting locked out of his hotel room. Like, because the production office was in the Four Seasons. I have two main memories, actually. Howard using the... Howard Kramer, that way, the aforementioned, using the production books from previously to look up Parker Posey's number and repeatedly call Parker Posey's apartment in New York, claiming to be her Uncle Howie. Because he would come there like every weekend. I was there in the office by myself. And so he'd come for like the free, there'd be, you know, you get like a free lunch from Four Seasons. Right. And he would just look through that book and call Parker, call Parker Posey every weekend for like a month. And just go, oh, is Parker there? And the guy would be like, what? No. And he'd be like, tell her Uncle Howie called. And just hang up. Which he did. And then the other one was Tone Loc getting locked out of the 4C of his room somehow. But instead of calling the front desk, calling me and just saying that, like, he's just, like, smoking weed in the hall at the Four Seasons and going, like, I got to. He goes, I got to hit this shit before my son Bijan shows up. I never figured out if he was saying Bijan or Dijon, like what Tone Loc's, if there only there was some way to find out. But so that was my blank check memories.
During that time, I was walking down 6th Street from the Black Cat to somewhere, and he was walking up 6th Street.
Uh-huh.
And I might have been drunk and maybe a little too physical with my trying to get his attention as he was walking by, but he was not nice.
Oh, really?
I don't remember exactly what he said, but I just remember going like, God, Tone Loc is fucking mean.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Well, we always used to play the game of, it was so weird, because it was always weird then to see a celebrity in Austin, too. Yeah. It was still like a rarity. You know? I guess nowadays you just see people, but we would always play like the, we'd sit there on the sidewalk and people walk by and you'd do that. Oh, I loved you in Raising Arizona or whatever, right. You know, people that look like, you know, Nicolas Cage, whoever looks like somebody. And so then one of the guys that was in Blank Check, Michael Lerner, who was like, he walks by and, you know, and I can't remember if it was Howard or somebody else goes like, oh, I love you in Miller's Crossing. But, you know, he was in Miller's Crossing because he was in Blank Check. And so he stops me and he's just like, oh, I need you to send this Elvis, you know, because I was the PA and he like found some Elvis statue that he needed me to send somewhere, I don't know, or something. So, you know, they just start cracking up, you know, because it was that guy, you know. So anyway,
then how were you co-creator of Howard of Austin Stories?
Well, we wrote on it.
You wrote on it. Okay. It's like, it was created by somebody else.
We all, you know, created it, but you know what we. The producing credit went to the guy who put the whole thing together. So
who was that?
On one hand, it's like we all contributed. Jim Jones, he produced the Ben Stiller Show and, you know, a lot of other stuff since then. But and on the one hand, it's like we all contributed. But on the other hand, it's like we wouldn't have gotten that going by ourselves, you know, because it wasn't just like now where you just do like a YouTube thing and it takes off or whatever.
Right.
This was like, you know, you had to have somebody come in and produce it. And so they had a talent search thing with MTV in 94, which was like, they looked at 10 cities and they just wanted to build a show around a city, you know, kind of like the real world, but do it like a fictional real world.
Right.
And so they looked at 10 cities and they just ended up liking Austin best and the comedy scene in Austin best. And it was really just also timing too, because like most of the people in the comedy scene then were like older as well. You know, the people who were really like established in the comedy scene around here were already like in their 30s or
like
whatever.
Like J.C. Shakespeare and guys like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Carry On or people. Yeah. And so just by virtue of being young, you know, since Howard and Laura and I were all in our 20s, you know, it was just became that kind of thing because, you know, we were in the MTV target market and there were other young comedians too, but I don't know, for some reason they took a shine to the three of us. And then Johnny Hardwick, who's like 10 years older than we are, but seemed younger. And so he went to do King of the Hill. He's the voice of Dale.
Oh, right.
On King of the Hill. Whatever happened to him? But he was a writer and a voice on King of the Hill. And so I guess Johnny just lights cigars with his residual checks, I don't know. And so, you know, it took them, they kind of lumped us together because we weren't working together as a group and they just threw us together as a group.
And was that your first experience like writing?
Yeah. And so there was a lot of growing pains and everything and stuff where, you know, I didn't have the emotional facility to deal with a lot of that stuff and dealing with, you know, interpersonal connections. And it's weird sometimes when, you know, when you're young and because everything in entertainment is so youth-oriented, but you're not really, you don't have the faculties to deal with it yet.
No,
they
just
like throw stuff at you and you're just like, you don't know how to, nobody's has told you how to deal with that, you know? And so you have to just kind of navigate it on your own and you just make a lot of mistakes, you know? There was like another female character that was going to be in the show and this and that whole thing turned out to be like a shit show, you know, and just handled badly and, you know, it's just like, it's a long story, but
sure,
you know, it's just one of those things that when you're young, you just kind of go, well, that was, you look back on it and think, well, that could have been handled better, you know.
Is that show, so, do people talk about it other places than in Austin?
Yeah, every once in a while.
Is it
I mean,
still
but
alive?
I don't know. I just see like just weirdos. I mean, they're not weirdos. They're nice to even remember it. But I always peg them as weirdos because, like, who remembers that, you know, show? But they'll come out of the woodwork, like, on Facebook and Twitter and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So there was some kid that was at the show, at the shows I did last weekend at the Velveeta Room that came up and he's like, oh, yeah, I make these stickers that say Austin Stories is the best TV show and put them all around town and stuff like that. And I was like, what? You know? And so I saw there was one of them at, like, Wahoo's Fish Taco or something. And it's cool, I guess, because it's still so, like, no one remembers it that it's still kind of cool in a way. The memory of it is probably cooler than the actual show was, even though the show got good reviews.
No, I've gone and watched it.
But what's that?
I went and watched it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
I mean, I remember I always had friends that were on there.
It's funny. Oh, yeah? Who do you? Because there was one show that was just all musicians. Like, the episode that I wrote of the series just had a lot of musicians in it.
Benjamin was in it. You know Benjamin
from
Real Heroes?
Yeah, ginger guy. Yeah. He's awesome. Yeah. He was really funny. It was like he had like a megaphone in it or something. I remember Don Walser.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to remember who was in that. There was like a little montage.
Juliana Sheffield.
Yeah, she was so pretty. She was in like
she was
in one of the other episodes like with as one of like Howard's girlfriends.
Yeah,
I remember? Yeah,
she's still.
She's beautiful.
Oh.
Uh-huh.
she's dreamy.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
I know she sang like back up on like David Garza or something. Right?
Equally
like
dreamy. That. Equally as dreamy. I ran into them at a coffee shop like a month ago.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like,
that's amazing.
But still dreamy.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just remember that episode where there was an episode where I started a band and they like kicked me out of it. But still wanted to use the apartment. Which is, that sounds funny as a story. Now that I recount it,
there was
a lot of musicians in that one.
Outside of our romance, do you do music?
No, not really. No. I did work out. We could play a new our romance song. I was just working on this our romance song.
Oh, really?
A couple days ago with my friend Matt Cooper that did the first our romance album. The only Armand's album, Armand's Greatest Hits. And then, and my friend Eli Braden helped me with it too. He wrote, he's always on Howard Stern. He does like all these parodies on Howard Stern and stuff. But he's a really funny guy. But yeah, we did this song the other day. It's just like kind of a fake Morrissey song.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Who's the guy, who's the voice, like there's a voice of our romance that it sounds like, I can't tell if it's OMD, but it's that kind of like...
Yeah, you're right in the pocket there.
Sad synth ballad singer from England.
Yes, my friend Karen calls it synthesized whining. I said that like I was going to go see OMD. This is just like a few years ago. I was like, I'm going to go see OMD. And she was like, you like that synthesized whining?
Yeah.
Like that. And I was like, yeah, I do. But yeah, well, I lump it in. The inspiration for our romance was Martin Fry from ABC.
There you go, yeah.
Because like I went to an ABC show in like 2004 or something. It was like the first time they'd played in a long time. So he was doing that thing where it's like second, you know, singing the first verse again, not remembering the second verse.
Really?
You know, it was before he really... Now they play like every year.
So he's up on it?
Yeah, so it's great. But this is like the first time they've been together and for a while. But just his stage presence, because it was just at like House of Blues on the Sunset Strip,
yeah.
You know, which is maybe, I don't know, 1,000 people. I don't know what the capacity is in there. But he, you know, and it's probably like 500 to 800 people are there. But the great thing about those English stars is they just treat every show like they're playing to the back of Wembley. So he's just like grand and big and just talking about how he didn't want to wear the suit. It's too hot, but he promised a tailor on Savile Row that he would do it for the people in Los Angeles, you know. And like the OMD guy is the same way. Like they did this show a few years ago and it was just, they sold out two shows at the Fonda, which is really just like, I don't know, 2,000 people when you get down to it. But he's just going like, our manager said we couldn't do it. And, you know, and you're like, well, why would they, why would he say that? Why would you bring it up now? You know, it's just like, but we did. We showed them, didn't we? And I'm like, well, that's the guy that you're going to like work with. I mean, I guess they
that's hilarious.
Know how to deal with him. But, and he goes like, a lot of our songs, Americans aren't as familiar with them. So if you don't know this next one, don't worry, because it's fucking brilliant. I mean, it's just like, this guy's like 55 or however old he is. But he's still got like this massive, you know, attitude about it. You know, it's just like, so like those guys, the main inspiration was, along with Martin Fry is they're all named Martin, damn it, but he's Phil Oakey from Human League.
Oh yeah.
Cause he, that I might like some people think, I don't know. I just admire the whole story of Human League because it's just, they get written off as like, don't you want me? And yeah, most of their music is really horrible. And like, yeah. You know, they did this album with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis that is just,
isn't just that
amazingly
human?
Regrettable. Yeah, that yeah, had yeah, human yeah, on yeah. it. Like where it's like, we'll go to Minneapolis. I mean, they had a whole album before that they just scrapped, that they just decided to go to Minneapolis and it just doesn't really like meld or
yeah.
I don't know. It's just so crazy that the stuff they do. But just the fact that, you know, they were all in they were really a serious artsy band when they were Human League before the girls joined, and then they had that breakup and you know, Phil Oakey just saw these two women dancing in a club and just goes, hey, I like the way you look. Do you want to be in the Human League? and it just horrified the members of the old Human League that went on to be Heaven 17 because they were still like trying to do their artistic ambitions and everything.
Right.
So when they heard about it, they were like, who's in the Human League? Because somehow, because he had like gotten the rights to the, you know, to the name or they, like he fought for the rights to the name Human League or whatever. And so, but they were still, the Heaven 17 people were still very sore about him getting the name and everything.
Yeah.
And then it's suddenly like these two women that can't even sing are in the Human League.
Right.
But just cause they looked cool.
And then all of a sudden they went on to become worldwide.
Yeah.
Sensation.
Yeah. And their number one song kept the Heaven 17 song from being number one. just
let
like
me
that
go
kind of thing. Yeah, like in England anyway,
okay.
Or maybe Temptation, but it, one of those. But it's just so funny too how Don't You Want Me is the 10th song on the Human League album. It's the last track, which is weird.
Really?
Which is weird.
Yeah, it's super weird.
It's like, did they not know that that would be like the big, I mean, how many huge songs are the last track on an album? I don't know. I can't think of one. And then, and that album was playing. That was the album that was playing when Lester Bangs was found dead. Was Dare was on the turntable. I don't know if he was like reviewing it or if it killed him.
It was the straw. It was the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah.
That was it.
But anyway. But what I like about him that is good for like a comedy character is just his attitude is just. It's just so he doesn't care still, and so it's just like I saw this show. At the Hollywood Bowl, it was like one of those 80s package tours.
Right.
And so it was like, I think that year it was like, it was The Fix. It was like Berlin and then The Fix and then B-52s and then Human League. But like B-52s, you know, I mean, it's just like they're like the all-time ultimate party band. So everyone's just going crazy and everything. And then the Human League comes on and their set is just black and white. It's just four huge old analog sounding synthesizers. And he comes out in black sunglasses and a black duster. And
dyed black hair?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's just totally bald now. He's bald and he's got like the black sunglasses, black ankle length duster, and it's in the middle of the summer, and he just comes out and he just goes, we are the Human League and we're a synthesizer band. like that. It's just like, what? It's like the whole audience, except for me, I'm like, woo! It just seems like the whole rest of the audience is just like, what? Like, huh? And then, of course, you know, they open with like two new songs. Not a good move, you know? And then like, and you know, and so everybody at the talk with the, you know, 50-year-old soccer moms after the show, of course, is like, well, the B-52s, they should have gone on last. You know?
Yeah.
So
they're still good, man.
B-52s?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're great. They really found something unique. I love the B-52s. And
yeah.
I've been to where, like, even to Athens, I'm sure. I'm sure you've been everywhere.
But yeah.
Yeah, we went to where the first house was, where they you know, where they played their first show. And we're, like, taking pictures across the street, and then people are sitting on the porch just, like, going, like, yeah, we know what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, but it was just, like, you know, it's just that whole scene down there. Oh, my God, that Work Street Records in Athens, and you go in there and look at the posters on the wall, where it's, like, because, like, two things, like, I love music, and I love not spending money. So it's, like, when I see, like, a bill where it was, like, it's, like, there's a poster in there. It's, like, XTC, REM, and the B-52s. $1.75. I'm just like, that's just like the dream. That's the dream concert of
all
time. That's
a total dream. Is what are you into now musically? Frankie Goes to Hollywood. You moved on to.
I love Frankie Goes to Hollywood. I don't know. Just like a lot. I'll get back into like old stuff usually, like stuff that's newer that I like. I like Tame Impala. And,
yeah.
You know, because. I mean, I'll end up liking anything in a way that sounds like something from previously before.
Right,
so
yeah.
If it sounds like a lo-fi ELO or something, you know, I'm going to like it. Or, you know, it's just, it seems like it's easier to, you know, it's easier to find stuff now, but it's kind of harder to like weed it out and everything. It's almost like you have to hear from like a friend or something.
Yeah.
What's out.
You know, Benjamin, Hotchkiss and I from The Real Heroes are in a band called Skyrocket. That's like this crazy, like super hits of the 70s and 80s cover band.
Yeah.
And we're playing tonight. I don't know what you're doing.
Oh, really?
I would invite you out to a one-to-one bar and put you on the list.
Where is that?
It's across from Saxon Pub on South Lamar.
I might be. When are you guys doing that? I have to like eat dinner with my friend. And yeah, maybe. I might be able to come out and do that.
Your friend wants to come. Whatever.
That's so crazy.
If you like that kind of music.
What kind of songs do you play?
It's all kinds of stuff from like, you know, ABBA, the Bee Gees, the Cars, Heart.
Oh, wow.
I sing Hot Child in the City.
Nice.
And, yeah.
Nick Gilder.
A bunch of different singers. Everybody switches instruments and sings. Yeah, it's a good time.
Ah, that sounds fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to see that.
So I know that you wrote on the Beavis and Butthead. What do you
the
call
redo,
it?
The redo, I guess. Or there were some the episodes reprise. In 2012 that were on MTV.
Yeah. When I told my Uncle Jack I was talking to you today, he said, fuck, dude, tell him I love him.
What?
He's like the world's biggest Beavis and Butthead fan.
It's so crazy. You watched all the new ones and everything?
He's like, what are you up to today? I was like, oh, I'm doing a podcast with this guy, Chip Pope. And he said, who's that? I was like, oh, you probably know him because he wrote on the redo of Beavis and Butthead. And he was like, oh, fuck, dude, tell him I love him.
That's awesome.
So I said, all right.
Oh, man.
So hey from Uncle Jack.
Well, hey, Uncle Jack.
And and you wrote on Ellen and then the Rosie Show.
Ellen. Oh, God. The Rosie Show. I've worked for all the lesbians. I really have. Ellen, Rosie, I don't know how this happened. Wanda Sykes, who's like the best. And but that's it, though. I think I'm out. You know, unless Rachel Maddow does like a talk show or something, I think I'm.
Isn't what she does
through with
show?
All the lesbians?
Oh no, just a
well,
news
if she did like
show.
If she did like an entertainment show, I don't know.
How do you write for a talk show?
Chip? Oh boy, I don't know. Maybe you could give me some pointers.
I don't know
because the first one I wrote on, I got fired, and then the second one I wrote on got canceled. So I'm not really sure how you do it. It's a bit of a slog. I don't know how people. You know, there'll be some people where you go, like, you look and, you know, they've been, like, the head writer of Conan for, like, 15 years or something. And just like, oh, wow, they must just be tired looking and old and gray. And because it's really a slog. It's like feeding a beast, you know, because you have to every day. It's like you know, and you watch, and the problem is with some of those shows, it's like you watch it and it looks like nobody did anything and they just yeah. are having the show and it's not very good.
Well, right.
But, you know, it takes the same 12 hours a day to make a bad show as it does to make a good show, you know, yeah. and so you're just there doing that. So I don't know. I mean, like the Rosie, it's interesting because like the Ellen show, like I have a lot of interesting stories about it, but I can't tell any of them.
Sure.
Because, you sign a non-disclosure form, right. when you, which, you know, that right there should indicate something that is, maybe that's not the best job in the world. But, I mean, it's everybody's, like, that's worked there has, like, Ellen stories. But you know, I guess you got to wait until certain key parties aren't with us anymore or something.
Right.
But with the Rosie show, though, Rosie O'Donnell is, like, she's just exactly what you see. So it's not that it's difficult to do, it's just, I mean, she's obstinate or whatever, but you wouldn't expect anything less, you know?
Right.
Like most people are, there's a lot of people that seem like they're really nice, and then behind the scenes they're not so nice, but then when you see people that are just exactly what you'd think, like you wouldn't expect to work with Rosie O'Donnell and just think, well, she must be a kitty cat to work yeah, with, you know course. What I mean? Like yeah. you know what you're getting, so yeah. in that way it's great, because you always would know where you stood, you know, and it was in like a pile of shit. but it was also like fun. It was like one of the more interesting experiences I had, because it was in Chicago, and so I lived in Chicago for like 4 months during the winter. Oh, and we're all out there at the Oprah Studios, and there's just snow and everything, and you know, I always likened it to like The Shining, you know, I just like to think of it like
getting
that.
Locked in the Overlook.
You're just out there, yeah, you're just out there in the hotel, and there's this some crazy maniac running around. You're yeah. like enabling her, you know.
So I read on your Twitter that you wrote some for the new Natasha Leggero. This is going to come out after it airs, but
the the new Comedy Central. Oh, yeah. There's a show on this weekend, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a hell of a lot of fun. She's my favorite. Like, I've known Natasha for a long time, and she's, you know, just getting some steam going. I mean, she's on, like, she's like on Comedy Central like all the time. She might as well be like the lady of Comedy Central, because she has her own show, that Another Period, that's on there. That's her, have you heard of that show? It's really funny. It's takes place in like 1903. It's kind of like if you put the Kardashians into Downton Abbey, basically.
Oh, okay.
And so it's just these socialites. It's basically it's the first two women that really wanted to get famous by doing nothing, you know,
oh, okay.
just being socialites. It's very funny. I mean, they've had like Jack Black and Ben Stiller. I mean, they've had like some really serious guest stars in there too. And then, you know, and then it's like her on the roast, you know.
Yeah, I saw her on the roast.
Written some roast jokes for her for the for the Justin Bieber one, and then the one from the year before. And then we did this stuff, and Howard's in the hip hop video that's going to be in her special.
Oh, really?
If it's still in there. You never know. I don't know. I don't know what, like, makes the cut and everything.
Right.
But, yeah, and some sketches and stuff like that. It was really fun. We filmed it up in San Francisco at Bimbo's. Have you ever heard of that place?
Uh-uh.
It's really just this amazing old-time supper club that's been around since the 40s.
They have music and stuff there?
Yeah, they have music. Just the stage. It's amazing. Because it's just kind of, like, in that same condition, vintage condition that it was in the 40s, so it was like the perfect place for her special, because she's like really elegant and everything. And then we did a thing where we showed I really felt bad afterwards because it was my idea, but I was like, why don't we just go out to Downey or somewhere and show a test group of, you know, these kind of like mutants that watch focus group mutants, and just show them the stand-up, you know, that you did last week. And so we're just watching them through one-way mirror. Just a few of them are laughing. It's just like 10 random people. You know, a few of them are laughing. A few are just like, okay, whatever. Because it's, you know, 3 p.m. and they're watching stand-up. So
right.
It's like, you know, they're not drunk or, you know, at a show. And it's not going to be the same thing. And Natasha just has her hand over her face the whole time. I'm just like, I'm so sorry for this idea. And then then she goes in and just surprises them. You know, they start talking about what they think about her and everything, and then she just walks in on them. You know, and so It was weird. One group reacted like, oh, yeah, she's just going to walk in on us. For some reason, it's like they all thought that. And then another group was like really surprised, you know. But
that's weird.
It was so funny, and too. And like all that, and just the responses were so different. It's so different. I don't know. I just always empathize with females in comedy because it's just such a hard racket. Because it's just like everyone in the focus group, the females were all concentrate on what she was. They were all talking about what she was wearing. Or, you know, I mean, mainly what she was wearing. Like, this one girl was just like, why did you wear that dress? It looked like you were crashing a prom, you know, and stuff. And Natasha's like, what should I wear? And she's like, you should just wear jeans and, like, a tank top. And, like, you know, you're going to the club, you know. And then all the guy, and, you know, and the focus group person was like, did you find what she was wearing distracting? And, like, almost all the women were like, yes. And the guys were just like, what? What about what she was talking about? You know, it was really interesting to see. And then, of course, and then some of the other guys just like, yeah, she's hot. You know, like there's just no analysis beyond that.
Right.
Know, just, so.
Do you write like screenplays at all?
Yeah. Yeah. But not that often, because screenplays, it's hard, you know, because especially for comedy, because there's just no, there used to be like five or six, you know, comedies that were like $30, $40 million.
Right.
A year, you know, that a $30, $40 million budget.
Right.
And there would be like six of those movies that come out every year. And, you know, you were able to try and get in, to write to that, cater to that market and try to sell something that way. But now it just seems like, you know, you either have like these movies that are cost no money or movies that cost $100 million. And so you think like there used to be like a, you know, like that Vacation reboot or whatever.
Right.
There used to be, I mean, not to just say, I don't know, it's just all reboots now and everything. Say like We're the Millers or something like that. There used to be a movie like that every two or three months,
yeah,
if you remember. Now yeah, it's just like there'll be one in the summer, there'll be one in, you know, the fall. It's just kind of like there's not that same market for comedies.
That's
like
weird.
That anymore, I think. I mean, I just is as far as I can tell, maybe sometimes I'm not as clued in on that, but I feel like there used to be a lot more of those kind of movies, and now it's just kind of like, it's more like PG-13 horror movies, you know, like every commercial see, like, you know, when they cater to like the younger audience, it's just anything they can make really cheaply.
Yeah.
Just a lot of those found footage horror movies and, you know, just... And then just there's so many indie movies that come out that you just never see because they're either just all on, they're on demand, or they come to, you know, the art house and you miss them, you know. So, but I mostly just try to write TV shows and stuff. So,
do you write?
That's
like
what I've been successful at.
Yeah, are you writing on anything now?
Yeah, I just finished working on this National Geographic sketch show, which again,
really?
The show business is so weird right now. Yeah. It's going to be on at the end
a
of
national
the year.
It's
comedy. It's like comedy history.
But, oh, wow.
Could probably thank Derek Waters for that, but, you know, drunk history.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's this comedy history sketch show that'll be on at the end of the year. It's called Now We Know, and it's a mini series. So it's 4 hours long, four episodes, and it's about the history of economics, the history of money. There's one that's just kind of like a general like history of everything, you know, the history of entertainment. I'm trying to think of what all four episodes are. And it's really weird. And we had like this kind of a fake sitcom structure around it with like a family that was really dumb sitcom family. And the family changes like every episode and they need to be educated. Like one time the dad is like David Koechner, and one time I think it was like Steve Carell or something. And then one... Then Cheech and Chong are in it. I don't know. Just all these random people are in it. But, you know, Howie Mandel. Just random thing. You know, you're like, what? But, yeah. And so it's just kind of a grab bag of sketches and that are held together by this sitcom.
Did they have, like, family. Comedians and historians writing together or just
Yeah, well,
we
there was, like, writers from the sketch group in Los Angeles was a lot of the writers, because like it's just like these three super smart dudes called Convoy, okay. But they're just like really into history and all that. And so they were great for it. A lot of the stuff just went over my head sometimes. I'd be like, what are we doing? But Howard worked on it. And then, because certain things I was like in for, like history of entertainment, I'm in, you know, but history of economics, I'm kind of like double entry bookkeeping. What the hell are we talking about? You know, like yeah. some concepts are just like, what? You know?
Yeah.
But, and then Josh Brenner was on there on the staff too. And he plays Big Head on Silicon Valley.
Oh yeah.
And he's really great. He's on the Mark Maron show on IFC as well. But he's a really funny writer. He's from Houston, actually.
Oh, he is?
A really funny guy. And then the showrunners are Dave Krinsky and John Altshuler, who ran King of the Hill, you know, for 10 years. And they created Silicon Valley with Judge and all that. But Mike isn't, you know, involved in this thing. But it's a really great show.
That's awesome. Yeah, I wish I had, so I don't have on. I have a weird cable package. I was going to say I have a weird package, but that would be a whole different story. I have a weird cable package. Yeah, I got like super fast internet and then like just like the local channels and HBO for a good price. And I don't really watch any
Seems
of the
like
other
all
channels.
You need,
yeah, that's what I think. But yeah. I'm going to miss this show.
I'm sure it'll be online. You know, everything's online. So it's just a question of sitting down and watching it.
Yeah.
That's the thing, you know?
What do you watch?
Cause
is there stuff you watch?
I just love mostly like stuff. I am just like a captive, I guess, to HBO in a way. Cause I'll just watch usually anything on there. I kind of like, although it's weird though, how it switched. Like right now I'm not too enamored with it, you know? And of course everybody's talking about how crappy the new True Detective is or whatever, but I enjoy watching it on, I thought some of it was kind of hilarious, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it sucked because I was so, like, into it as, like, you know, because they get me, you get me any, you get me in any time with a Leonard Cohen song. So I was this is going to be real good Leonard Cohen. Yeah. All right, here we go. I'm in, you know?
Yeah.
But then, like, I don't know. I just missed the whole interplay between McConaughey and, like, if you didn't have the first season to compare with,
it would have been
amazing. It'd probably be just fine, you know. It'd be like, oh yeah, that's a good show. But when you're comparing it to that, the whole chemistry that they had, and the whole, you know, just that. I mean, they were both so great in it, and I don't know if, and I like, I think I probably like Colin Farrell the best I like his character the best on the new ones.
Yeah,
but Vaughn just seems in over his head. I mean, you know, I like the guy and everything, but like acting wise, it just seems like, oh boy,
yeah. Yeah, there was just it was just something weird about his character was just too bad.
Yeah, there's
you know what I mean?
Nothing redeemable like, yeah. about him. And you're just like it's a, yeah, you'll be like, "Oh, here's a chance to make the guy show the guy something good about the guy," and instead it's just he's staring in a stain talking about child abuse, you know. It's just like,
yeah,
okay.
With that, he just yeah. yeah. What about comedy stuff?
Well, Silicon Valley. Well, that's the other
thing.
Yeah,
that's my favorite.
Because it's like, yeah, I love that show. Yeah. But like one week, it seemed like 1 week on HBO, they had like, it was Silicon Valley. I'm trying to remember. It was like the end of, you know, a couple of seasons of things. So it was like the end of Silicon Valley, the end of another really funny thing.
Veep.
Yeah, the end of Veep, the last episode of Veep for this season. But then by next week, it was Ballers, which is just horrible. And what's the other show they have?
Oh, yeah.
The
Brink.
The Brink, which I'm warming up to it, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. It took me a while to get that the tone is not really like an HBO tone. It's more, it seems like it's something that should be on Showtime or something. But, you know, it just has that tone. You know, like Showtime, I always think
that's
of
weird,
as
yeah.
like, I always think of Showtime as like, it'll have someone you know in it, but the music's shitty. You know what I mean? Like, it's just not as good somehow.
Remember show, Brothers? In like the 80s?
No. Oh, wait. Was that Gay
Showtime?
Brothers or something? Or something? Was that like
someone was
gay that
like
a big sitcom? Like a. It was done
Showtime.
Like an audience sitcom, right?
Like video and like.
I barely remember it.
Yeah. But, were they gay?
I don't know. I think there was. Maybe there was a Gay Brother. Maybe that was like a first thing, but
didn't they also have Gary Shandling's show?
Yeah,
it's Gary Shandling show. I like that show.
That was probably the best thing they did. But then it went over to I remember when it went over to like Fox or something for a while. I don't know if they just showed the reruns on Fox from Showtime. Maybe it was just the reruns.
Is it weird living in LA?
Like Yeah. but what aspect do you mean?
I don't know. I just talked to, do you know who Penelope Spheres is? Yeah, you know.
Yeah, I know who she is. Yeah, yeah.
I just talked to her and she was just like, I'm not an LA person. I can't, you know. And I was like, you know, for me, when I was there recording and kind of with a purpose and with like a record deal and showing up places with a very famous person, it was very fun.
Right,
people
yeah.
were very welcoming and interested. Yeah. And then otherwise, it just always felt like shut out and just weird.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because like everybody, yeah, there's always just somebody trying to, that's more impressive. It's always like, well, who cares about you when Tom Hanks walks by or whatever. You know right. what I mean? There's always going to be like a bigger.
Yeah, it seemed like there was a cool scene. And I mean, this was a while, but I mean, the late 90s and early 2000s, just with the musicians and stuff. And I know in the comedy thing there is too. Like, kind of very cool people hang out at Largo.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
like, David Garza plays there and all the time. And,
well, they changed Largo, though. Like, Largo changed right. a little bit because now it's in a bigger place, and so they have, like, the pressure to fill up this whole big room.
Right.
And they still have the small room. Like, Sarah Silverman filmed her last special in the little room.
Yeah.
Which is great because it's only about 30 people fit in there or something.
But does John Bryan still do Friday thing there?
Yeah, but I think sometimes I think he does it in the big room though. When he does do it,
that guy's awesome. Something about eating dinner there and watching those. You know what I mean? There was just something like,
oh, it's like the best. Like my friend was going out with John Bryan for a while, and like I did this. We were doing this TV show or something, but before the show, we were just hanging out in the green room, and John Bryan, you know, had a guitar. And he just knows every goddamn song, the back of his hand. So he'll just be like, play the Kinks, blah, blah, blah. And he just knows it. And so we were just having so much fun, like, singing songs with him. And then when it came time to do the TV show, it was like, meh. It was like, this isn't going to be as fun.
Yeah.
It's just hanging out, you know, with John Bryan playing the guitar.
I remember when that thing was, like, at its height, you know, in the late 90s in the old place and... it was across from Cantor's, right?
Yeah. And, it's right there on Fairfax.
And the guy that signed my band, this guy, Dan McCarroll, do you know him?
No.
He was the drummer of this band, The Grays, that John Bryan was in. But he would play drums on those Friday nights and stuff. So we would go down there with him and do this whole thing. And they tried to make it a TV show.
Oh,
on VH1,
really?
You can actually find it on YouTube.
Oh yeah,
yeah. It's real stiff. I think Elliot Smith is the first guest.
Oh my,
because those guys were real good buddies.
Wow.
But yeah, it's funny because they tried to sort of commercialize that scene, and it just didn't.
It didn't work. Yeah,
they didn't even shoot it at Largo. They made a set for it somewhere.
Oh my God,
like,
how
oh,
weird.
John at Largo. You know?
Oh wow.
Yeah, it was real weird.
Well, we did. Yeah, there was a show. Well, there was a show called Late Friday that was on NBC that tried to do that. I was on that show once. It was done at the Knitting Factory.
Okay.
So it was just kind of like they tried to reproduce what was going on at Largo.
Is that on Hollywood?
It's at the Knitting Factory. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's not there anymore.
Okay.
But, you know, there was a Knitting Factory on Hollywood Boulevard for a while there. But
where do you do your...
I do... Well, sometimes at the improv, but mostly at like
alternative shows.
Yeah, like bringer show and not bringer shows. What's that? No, like there's so it's so weird in Los Angeles because there's like some really great shows to do, and then there's like these weird bringer shows where you're supposed to bring people from the audience. I don't ever do shows like that, but like but then there's all these book shows. So I end up doing mostly shows like in like. Gay bars, really. There's like I don't
are they
know,
like
five,
specifically
five different gay bars.
Comedy shows?
Yeah, but everybody will be in them, you know. And I just like those shows because they're more diverse. There's more women in the lineup. There's like more, you know, ethnicities and stuff. It just seems it's more unique than when you go to like a show at the improv or somewhere where it's just all like white guys, you know. Which is fine, you know, but it's just, I mean, I am a white guy, but I just like to see different, different points of view and things, you know, because as many people that do comedy now and everything, there is like a sameness and there's like a sameness in the point of view, like everyone is just kind of doing a version of Louis C.K. really, of just like, I'm just going to talk about the thing that happened, you know? And so when you see like somebody who really has a unique point of view, and not to say that Louis C.K. isn't like the best comedian ever and super unique and hilarious and all that, but it's just like there, it just seems like maybe 15 years ago, there are people that are more willing to do weird stuff. I just feel like there's not as much weird stuff anymore. You know, when you go to these clubs, there'll just be like two or three people that'll really kind of go out on a limb or whatever. Right. And I am not one of them. I am the person who just will stand there and this is what happened. You know, I do the same thing like that. But, you know, I just try to bring my own point of view to it.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
There was a thing, and I looked at the date when I heard you say it. I was watching everything I could find on YouTube of you doing stand-up.
Well, that's nice.
And there was a thing that you did a long time before Louis C.K. did it. You talked about how you were an ugly kid and even the child molesters didn't molest you.
Oh, yeah.
And he did that recently on Saturday Night Live. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
I mean, not exactly the same, but similar premise. You know. You also had a good thing about an albino, and then
you just have your own point of view, you know,
jerking off to the brawny guy.
I mean, I can only work on personal experience. You know.
So what's going? What's going to happen now when you go back?
I got to go back next week. We're going to do rewrites on that, on some of that National Geographic stuff.
Okay,
and then I might go to work on some other show, but I can't say what it is right now because it like hasn't been announced.
Well,
and
good. So, I'm glad
it
that you got
sounds
work.
Like all misterioso or whatever, but I just it's
no, but I know
out of deference to the people that like run the show said don't tell anybody.
But then also like you don't really want to talk. I mean, I'm in this. You know what I mean? Like we're in the same business. Like some things, somebody says something like, "Hey, you got this."
Oh yeah,
job.
It doesn't pan
and
out.
And until the job is actually done,
exactly,
you've gotten the money and it's in a release schedule somewhere. I don't usually say anything
about
it
right?
Either.
It's true. Yeah. Who knew Richard Marx would have been so prescient with his
It Don't Mean
Nothing? Yeah, that song I think is like, that's one of the best songs about show business. I mean, it's one of the worst Eaglesy kind of arrangements, but it's like
Do you
one
hate
of the best
Eagles?
Songs. Oh, no.
Oh,
no.
Good, because I was playing the Eagles when you came
I actually
up.
Love Eagles. And that notice how I say Eagles. Like the way it's supposed to be said.
Oh, not but, the Eagles. Yeah.
Or the lowercase the Eagles. But, I mean, I just, Long Run is one of my favorite albums ever.
Really?
I don't
like that album.
Oh, see, most people, yeah, I guess most people don't. But I love it. It's just, I love the sound of just a band falling apart.
And tons and tons of cocaine.
That's kind of my favorite. Yeah.
In Miami, just living the dream.
I know. It's like, did you see that Eagles documentary?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. It's so amazing because the first part of it, you're like, yeah, I love these guys. And then the second half of it, you're like, fuck these guys.
Yeah.
They're like the worst people in the world, you know. But
except Joe Walsh. You want to be related to him in some way. Yeah.
Oh, man. Do you ever watch Live at Daryl's House?
Yeah.
That's probably my favorite episode of that is Joe Walsh. Did you see the Joe Walsh one?
No.
So
once
so
again,
great.
I don't have that. I have to wait till I'm in a hotel somewhere.
You should just watch it on YouTube.
Oh, yeah. Hello.
Because it's great, you know, his playing's great, he's funny, he's Joe Walsh, and he's just like, yeah, I don't need, you know, all these songs that come out now with 7 producers and 8 songwriters, and, you know, he's just going off on everything, it's really fun.
We were just, in Skyrocket, we played in Connecticut, in the country, and we had to take a van from New York City to Connecticut, and we drove through this small, weird little town where the place...
Where Daryl's house
it's
is?
It's a venue.
Oh, my God.
And, yeah.
That's so crazy.
It's weird, yeah.
That's really cool.
That story went nowhere, did it? That was fucking awful.
I was like, and you stopped and by at Daryl's house?
And we kept going, and then I had to Google it, but I couldn't get service because it's out in the middle of the country. Chip, this is an amazing
that's
story.
That's an amazing story.
As a writer, hey, you think one of them big fancy LA, LA television show people be interested in my past driving by Daryl's house
yeah
story.
They want to make that into a daily show
do a daily
hourly
show.
Hourly updates I met Hall and Oates one time and Hall was really not that nice
what?
To me, for some reason I don't know or he just seemed like maybe who knows when you catch someone at some point it was like after a show but like you know I mean What was I saying? Oh, yeah. Oats wasn't that nice.
That's okay. That's weird because, you know.
Oats had a bit of an attitude, and then Daryl Hall was really nice, right? And so I was just like thinking, like, Oats needs to be nicer. What the fuck? He's Oats. And then a friend of mine is friends with this guy, Ned Lieber, I guess this guy, like Jerry Lieber's son, you know, Lieber and Stoller.
Yeah.
Ned Lieber, and it's all his time, and he produced some album with John Oates or something, so I mentioned that, and he goes, well, you must have caught them on opposite day, because usually it's the exact opposite.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I guess Oates is usually the real nice one in the band, I don't know.
Huh.
You can never, you never know, because you never know what someone's perception is of you know what I mean? People go, oh, they're nice or they're not nice, and you meet... Or someone that you've heard is not nice, and
right.
You meet them, and they're totally
super
polite,
nice.
And you kind of
yeah.
go, well, what is the person who told me they're not nice? What's their perception of things? You know, so.
That's always weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
I met someone who wasn't. Oh, you know who I met?
Who?
It was really nice. Andy Dick.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's a nice guy.
Yeah,
I've only
met him a couple times.
Really?
Yeah.
How do I end up? You know how I met him? I guess I don't even know if I should tell this story.
Uh-oh.
It was at a party for my band at Sunset. Oh, no, at Ocean Way.
Uh-huh.
And there was all these people there, and I went to the bathroom, and he was in a stall with a bunch of other people that I knew. And then I went in, and that's how I met him. But we ended up kind of like staying in touch for a little while. He had some show on Sirius, and a band I was in played on it and stuff.
Oh, okay. He was notorious for doing the old look at my watch gag. You know that one?
No.
Where you just wrap around your dick around your wrist and go, no. Hey, look what time it is. I don't know. I guess he's lucky if he has a dick that big that he can do it. But
he grabbed mine a lot.
And then, but it's like, hey, I'm not even interested. And then he just tries to play it off like, what am I doing?
He did do something funny. You know Ian Moore? That's who I was playing with when we were on
a show. I don't
know
him. I know
him. But you know who I'm talking about. Yeah, okay, yeah. So... we were promoting a record. I was playing with Ian at the time, and we were promoting a record. This was just a few years ago. And in the studio, we started playing a song live, and right when Ian starts singing, he goes, no. I don't like that one. Play something that you know I'm going to like. It's just like, what the fuck? He stopped another song. And then we started another one, and he liked it, so he pulled out some harmonica that was like in the wrong key and just started fucking blowing it.
Oh, my God.
It was hilarious,
that's
and luckily
awesome.
Ian had a sense of humor about it, because sometimes people can get really bad. Songwriters
well,
can.
Yeah.
Is there anything I'm missing? People can find you on Facebook and
so.
Twitter. You're
Instagram.
I like Instagram. I like Instagram,
too. Twitter for dumb people. You know, that's my favorite.
If you can't read.
Just put a picture up there. Yeah. Put a video. I mean, it's really fun. But I always tap out on my likes. You know, I don't really have that many followers, but everything always gets about 70 likes, and then that's it. You know, I always go, you know, when you look at your, like, there's got to be some kind of explanation or algorithm for that when you go, like, but I have this many followers. How come there's only this many people that like stuff? And then you kind of go, maybe that's only the.
Those are the only people that actually like you.
Yeah, maybe that's it. And maybe that's enough to go, well, 70 people, that's pretty good.
I like your stuff sometimes. I follow you on Instagram.
Yeah.
You did some shows with Ralphie Hardesty? I think he's funny.
Yeah, he's awesome.
I met him a couple times.
We did a show the other night, Monday night, at the Spider House. It was really fun, that Spider House ballroom. And then again, what was it, Tuesday at the... Empire control room in the backyard. That was weird because there was like this punk show going on
inside
in the big venue next door. And so they didn't bother to close the door between the venues. So people were just yelling over punk music. But then by the time I got up, there was hardly any crowd. There was no punk music playing. So I was disappointed. But I was just kind of enjoying how much the people sitting there weren't enjoying me. I don't know. I was like getting off on it. You know, I'm just like, oh, my God, I love this. You guys could not care less. It's so great, you know. And then, like, some guy that follows me goes, that guy's bitter. And I was like, bitter? How do you – what is that? What does that mean? I was enjoying it, you know. And so – but it was weird because, I don't know. It's fun, you know, when you're from out of town, it's always fun. You know how it is. You go to a different town, you're like a novelty. Because, like, I come back home and everywhere, just people just go, come do the show. Come do our show. Come do our show. It's great. And, you know, so I've done, like – I don't know, eight or nine shows in like 7 nights since I've been back.
Are you doing?
Because they just go, do the show.
Yeah.
There's so many more comedy shows than when we were coming up. You know, there was just like the Velveeta Room and the
and Cap City.
And Cap City, and then maybe an open mic every once in a while somewhere else. But, you know, now there's just so many shows, so many comedians, and there's so many good comedians, too. I mean, they're just really...
A lot of them are leaving, though, too. Like, I know... Do you know that guy, Ryan County, that you were
on the
show?
Oh, yeah, he moved to Los Angeles. Yeah, he's great.
He is really great.
And, he's just so... He's funny. He's a he's one of the ones that's more unique.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't just, you know,
he has
talk about
thing.
His day.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, are you doing anything else before you leave? Are you doing something Sunday?
Yeah, I'm gonna take my mom. My mom wants to test drive a Prius, so I'm gonna do that. And then she's so hilarious. Like yesterday, I had like I met with my friend for lunch at noon, and then I was gonna go do the Velveeta Room at 9, and my mom was like, when is there going to be time for me to steam all those vegetables for you? She just has this mom concerns. I'm just like, I don't know, maybe sometime in between 1 and 9. I mean, that sounds like plenty of time to steam vegetables.
Unless you slow steam them or something.
It's all like mom stuff for the most part.
Well, good.
I'm going to go eat at Micklethwaite's Barbecue. I like that place. And then, have you ever been down there?
No.
It's like a little cart down there on the east side, like maybe like East 6 or something. It's amazing. It's like barbecue. It's like you don't even need sauce. You know?
Okay.
It's just it's that kind of barbecue that's just so good. Micklethwaite's. It's a weird name.
Micklethwaite's.
And then, I don't know, I'm going to see the Amy Winehouse documentary with
a
friend
great.
Of mine tomorrow. Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks like it's going to be really, I mean, clearly it's going to be really sad, right?
It's very sad.
Oh my God.
But I don't want to spoil it for you, but she does live in the movie.
Uh-huh. Okay. Spoiler alert. But I want to have sympathy for her, you know.
You do.
Because, you know, you know how you judge certain things, you know, that you're not.
This isn't something where all of a sudden you're like, oh, she was like that? Fuck her. You
right,
see more.
Right.
You see more humanity than you did before.
Okay, good,
so, yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
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 What are you doing? You're doing a show tonight?
Doing a show tonight, going to Houston tomorrow, playing a wedding.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
What's that like? I'm sure you've I'm sure you've talked about it elsewhere. I'm sure we can all guess.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of money involved. Not a lot of weird. There's no fans. You know what I mean?
Right. Weirdos.
Because we have, I mean, you know, I can't say it because some of them listen to the show, but there are some people. It's an older crowd. You know, like you were saying, the resentments crowd got older. When you were saying that, I was like, oh, no, man, it's not. It's not the young hotties like I once thought it was.
Yeah.
But it's a different scene now. It's a different world.
You're just a hottie for a different demographic.
That's
right. You know, it's like you just take it.
They're,
you just accept it. Some people aren't ever a hottie for anybody, so why not?
Yeah. Yeah. Imagine people that think I'm young. That's
exactly.
My audience.
Right? It's like, well, when you're the young blood, it's pretty... One time Howard and I went to pitch a show at CBS. This was maybe like 6 years ago. And the waiting room is just all these old couches and like Hirschfeld caricatures on the wall. And like, you know, I mean, everything but a bowl of hard candy. You know,
yeah.
It just seems so old. And you just think, well, if we got to... job here would be the new blood, you know.
Yeah, you'd
so,
be the young,
you know,
guys.
Sometimes you just think, ah, the young, you could be the young kids again in certain situations, you
well
know?
We'll stay young. That's,
yes,
I think
let's
that
do
that's
it.
Okay,
let's stay young.
We'll go out with young people. We can compare notes,
right? Get their essence.
Yeah. Yeah, steal their essence.
Deal
the
with
of
their
youth.
Their weird their fickleness, you know.
Yeah. And Snapchat.
It's different when you're going out, like actually going out with someone. But, you know, I just always encounter people. It's, you know, it's going to go nowhere. So now I just have fun with like knowing it's going to go nowhere. And if it's, and if I see it's going nowhere, just like peacing out. Like, okay. And just saying like, you know what? This was fun for a while, but now you're just dragging me around. You're looking for your friends. I'm not having any fun. See you later. You know, it's just fun to just do stuff like that, you know, when you have no expectations.
Yeah. Well, thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks
I'm glad that we got
me.
To hang out.
Yeah, me too.
Don't you want me? You know I can't believe it when I hear that you won't see
Chip Pope. Great guy, man. He ended up coming out to the show last night with his mom, brought her out. They looked like they were having a great time. I didn't get to talk to him afterwards because he left before we finished playing, because we do play for a long time in Skyrocket. So thank you, Chip Pope. Everyone, I'll let you know when that National Geographic show comes out. And if in between then, you can follow Chip on Twitter and Instagram. He is at Chip Pope, all right? Don't forget, when you're out there on the Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and stuff, you can like our Facebook page, How Did I Get Here? And if you want to get more involved with me as a person, you can follow me on on Instagram and Twitter too. I'm at Johnny Gowdy. Okay. I want to thank Chip for coming by while he was in town. A great guy. I like him and that guy Howard Kramer a lot. They're hilarious people. So follow them and find out what's going on. All right. Have a great day. Whatever you're doing, if you're jogging, if you're not jogging, if you're sitting at your desk avoiding work, whatever you're doing, have a great day. Thank you for listening to the show. Let's get down.